Hello, and welcome to the ISA Audio Library. This is program number 406 in the series. The title is Motivation. This conversation with Ole was recorded at Studio One in Chicago. Ole asked me to be sure to tell everyone listening that working on ourselves can be rewarding and fun. So please have a good time of it while you listen. To receive this information as easily as possible, it is suggested that you listen in a quiet, undisturbed place, such as your home or your car. You can, of course, play the programs often and whenever needed.
I think it is important we look at this question of humanness. We can bring people up to become violent, critical, motivated. We know that from anthropology. We have studied a variety of cultures.
Bring them up as parents, you mean?
Bring them up as humans. We're talking about humanness. We know for a fact that we can bring people up, humans up, to proceed in a variety of directions. Now, that's a clue. That tells me that I can go in a variety of directions. Let's look for a moment and see what that would look like in ordinary terms. For instance, I could be brought up as a Russian, and I could be brought up and taught to hate Americans. I don't need to know about Americans. I don't need to know anything about their lifestyle. I don't need to know that one of them are called Joe and the other one is called Mary, and they have a happy little family with three kids, William, Bill, and William, Joan, and whoever. And that the kids are going to school and the parents are struggling to meet the budget, the needs to buy food and the taxes and mortgages. I don't need to know about that. I can be taught to hate them enough to kill them. So we know something about one of the aspects of what it is to be human. Now, we know other aspects. We know other possibilities. And what we are talking about, when we talk about motivation, we have to make distinctions. I think that one of the first distinctions we have to make, first we have to recognize that humans, if left to themselves, left to the kind of conditioning that they are exposed to, if they are left with only that, they will develop horizontally. And most people do, in certain aspects of their lives, at least. And it's not working. We know, for instance, that Russians can be brought up to be Russians above all. We know Americans can be brought up to be Americans above all. Where's the evidence? Well, we see little bumper stickers that says, "Nuke them." For instance. Well, that's a very primitive state of being human. It's not that it is not human. It is, however, very close to being a dog. Because a dog, we can bring up a dog to be loyal to its master and alienated towards everyone else. So we recognize links to the animal kingdom, which we can talk about as developing, utilizing the old brain, the part of us that is closest to the primitiveness, simplicity in terms of the evolutionary progression. Now, we need to explore, we are talking about motivation. If I'm motivated from that level, well, a dog, I think, would be motivated to have more bones. If it was given all the opportunities available and it saw 17 homes, One of the homes served pork chops, and the other home served dog food. I bet anything, I would even eat my old hat, that the dog would go for the pork chops. Now let's go into humans. I think that the humans would do the same. It looks to me, if we look at motivation, which is what we're looking at, it looks to me that people, for instance, lotteries, are like pork chops. You win in the lottery and you win pork chops. And what do people do? They sacrifice a few bones in order to see whether or not they can win pork chops. So pork chops can be used as a means to motivate. Now, we call that in human terms greed. The problem with pork chops, I mean, it's so funny to talk about pork chops, but the problem with pork chops is that you can only eat so many. But the greed is never satisfied, because the greed doesn't have to do with pork chops. The greed has to do with more pork chops. Now, that greed never gets satisfied, because you can never get enough pork chops if what you want is more pork chops. So motivation at one level of the evolutionary scale, which is, I don't like to call it a low level, because I don't think that dogs are lower than humans. Dogs have less potential than humans, that's all. But it's not that they're lower. They're absolutely necessary. But they have less potential. Having more doesn't satisfy. So when we look at, does having more, is that a useful motivator? If what we want is to be a fully developed human being, well, let's look. What is it that we want, actually? When we talk about motivation, I think that we have to go back to, what is it that we really want? Because motivation is like the direction that the energy, it's like a direction. It steers and crystallizes the energy so that the energy becomes like a laser beam. It pushes in a certain direction. What I would recommend to the listener is that before we talk about how do I maintain my motivation, we look at what is it that we want. Because if I'm not clear about what it is that I want, my motivation will run down. It has to be strengthened by something that nurtured, that somehow goes back continuously. It's like a circle. That motivation pushes us in a certain direction, and it comes back and pushes us onward towards something. Now, if what it is that motivates us is greed, then we are on a dead-end path. Because along the way, we don't get what we really want. We never get what we really want. I know that intermittently it looks as if we do. For instance, if you're a real estate salesperson, you say, what I want is another sale. Then you get a sale, and then you get what you want. But what is it that is behind the sale? What is behind the sale is that you want to make money, you want to be famous, you want to be whatever. That moves us along a horizontal plane. And if you got the sale that you wanted more so than anything else, and you made $8 million and then you died, did you get what you wanted? Would be a good question to ask. Because it is there that we see whether or not we are in fact getting what we want. I remember a teacher that I had who said to me, live your life as if this was the last day. So that brings in to focus, what is my motivation really? What is behind that which I call motivation? I want to be motivated for what? So now we have to go and look at what is my goal. Now my goal has to be If I'm going to be living my life as a fully expressed potential, I have to live my life being satisfied that whenever I die, be it tomorrow, that I was moving towards that which I really wanted. Because it's not so much whether I got there, it was whether or not I was moving in the right direction. The right direction meaning the direction that you and I secretly hold as our ideal. Well, a dog, I think that the dog would be pretty satisfied having 17 pork chops. Would you? Mm-hmm. Now, most of the human beings that I have met who have $17 million in the bank, if they were confronted with the possibility that tomorrow was their last day, they never say, yeah, I made it. Because what are the $17 million going to do tomorrow? I remember I had a conversation with a friend of mine. We were at a restaurant, and he asked me, what do you want? And I looked, and I just had a good dinner. I was sipping the last of a nice glass of red wine. And we were about to have a cup of coffee. And I thought, there isn't anything I want. There isn't anything that I don't have right this moment that would make any difference. I don't want any more food. I don't want any more wine. I don't want any money. There isn't anything that I want. I was complete. And I think that that is what people are looking for. They're looking for being complete. So that at that moment in time, I could have died. And it wouldn't be like, oh, well, I didn't get because I didn't want anything. So when we look at motivation, I think that first we have to look at goals. Now, are you a dog that want pork chops?
No, really.
Or a lion? No. That want a pride? Would that be enough? So now you're going to die and you have 17 women waiting for you to call. Now, if you were to die, would you feel complete and satisfied? When we talk about motivation, we have to begin to look at what is it that we really want. We have to bring death into the picture. I think that it is an important motivator in terms of, and that is the underlying theme of these tapes, in terms of how to up the quality of our lives. We have to bring death in. Now, I know that death is something that is almost impolite to talk about. It haunts us, though, every day. We can either be aware of it or not. It's still there because you and I have to confront it. We are building our coffin. And it doesn't have to be morbid. It can become morbid if you and I are operating on a horizontal plane, where we are nowhere near anything that looks as a possibility to transcend that morbidness that exists in the end of it all. Well, I think that lions are spared from having that thought even, because they don't look as if they are particularly preoccupied. They are willing to go into battle and give it everything that they have got, and they look to me as if they are willing to die. Now, humans are not that way. So human must have a further possibility of expression. And I say that the expression has something to do with the transcendence of that limitation which death imposes. And death is the real possibility for motivation. So, as you're listening here, driving down the highway, sitting in your living room, and you were to cut it off now, did you make it? Most of you are going to say no. All right. Maybe what the problem is that you are at the level of dogs pursuing bones or pork chops. I offer a possibility that we look further, Because humans, if the purpose was to get more pork chops, there weren't any reason for producing humans on the planet. Why? Dogs are perfectly capable of pursuing pork chops. They have been doing it for centuries, before humans. And they're pretty skilled at it. They're so skilled that they're now using humans to do their pork chopping for them. They're doing fine.
Funny picture.
We stand at a threshold as a possibility. We could begin to look at who we are by beginning to examine what are our goals. What do we want? You want to be happy? I think most people would say that that is what is at the bottom of it all. If they were to, it's not enough to have power and influence and popularity and approval and enough money to spend, rich. That's not enough. Marilyn Monroe was famous, sexy, rich. She could indulge herself in a nightgown, dressing gown, drinking champagne out of the bottle, spilling it over her boobs at 10 o'clock in the morning, and she committed suicide. She had it all. She had the adoration. She had the approval. She had everything that everybody wants all the time, and it wasn't working. Why? Because she was getting all the things that she thought contained a promise so that she could be what? Happy. But it was a mistake. It was going down the wrong channel. I remember a little story about a dog that walked across a bridge. It stopped and it had found itself a juicy pork chop. And it had it in its mouth. And as it walked across the bridge, it caught a glimpse of itself. Not knowing, it caught a glimpse of a dog with a juicy pork chop in its mouth, in the reflection, in the water. It stopped and looked. The juicy pork chop looked real attractive. So it at once went for the pork chop. In the process, losing its own pork chop. And what was left was a dog with no pork chop. One in the water and one on the bridge. And that is really what most of us, we run for and want and lose it all. What is it that we lose? Well, we lose what it was that we were running for, which was to be happy. We ran for having a good relationship by having more relationships, and we lost it. So when we talk about motivation, first we have to talk about what are our goals? What is it really we want? Well, we say we want more money because it'll make us happy. Well, we want a new car because that'll make us attractive, desirable. So we will feel happy. We want to have good looks so that other people will want us, which is going to make us feel happy. The bottom line seems to be all the time, no matter how we put it together, the end of it is that we have the experience of being happy. Aha. So now we go back and look. If we pursue this horizontal line of more pork chops, are we going to be happy? We have to look at some of the people who have gone down that line and see whether or not. Now, there was Howard Hughes. Howard Hughes had it all. Jets, he bought his own women, you know, and created stars out of them. And so he had a relationship with the star. And, I mean, he had everything. He built the biggest plane ever. I mean, he did all the things that he wanted. Was he happy? Well, as far as we can tell, he wasn't. He died as a skeleton. He couldn't even go to the bathroom. He died in an airplane. Lonely? He lived in a room where the curtains were drawn. He never saw the sun. He was a skeleton, pale. He could hardly eat anything. Yeah. So, moving down the horizontal plane, we have an opportunity to see where are we going? And what is it that we can expect to find there? Now, you can be a fool. I don't mind that you're a fool. There are a lot of other fools out there. I think that fools are people who pursue goals that other people have pursued and accomplished and not made it in accomplishing it. Those are fools. Now, if people who go in that direction and who have gotten to where you want to get have not made it, might it not be wise to look elsewhere? Humans, we are talking about humans. This is one possibility for humanness. I bet that it took evolution, whatever that is. It took it thousands and thousands and thousands of experiments before there was one who looked at, who am I? Thousands. They never looked. Now, that one human being who began to look at who am I took another step up the ladder. Now, every singular living organism is striving for harmony. You know, to buzz. It makes adjustments, do all kinds of things if things are not working, but it strives for harmony. So do we. We strive for harmony. We were given an added possibility. We were given a new brain that makes logic. We still have this passion that has to do with survival, which is dogness. Not to forget cats.
Which is the most common, is it what you're suggesting, is the most common motivator?
That's the most common motivator. That has to do with greed.
Survival.
Survival. More is better. Have you ever watched squirrels? I watch squirrels. What do squirrels do? Squirrels. They are squirrels. They are in pecan trees. Now, I got so mad at the squirrels in my pecan tree because they wouldn't just take three or four pecans and sort of enjoy them and leave the rest of the pecans until later. No, they would take every singular pecan, taste it and drop it and taste it and drop it, and then they'll duck down a few, you know, and they would take all of it. Well, that's pretty much the way that dogs are. They'll take all of it. They won't just take a little bit and then, no, they'll take all of it. So that's pretty much the way that humans are, isn't it? You have an opportunity to have it all. I mean, you know, people, if you ask people, do you want everything in life? What do they say?
Yes.
Yes, I want everything. Have you ever asked them where they're going to put it?
Or where they're
going to
get it.
You know, how you're going to transport it. So we have to establish that this is one level. It merely is one step in evolution. We can live like dogs, and there isn't anything wrong with it. We have pretty much an idea of where it leads. And as far as we can tell, people who pursue that direction, they end up where they are going. And that's pretty much determined. And when they end up there, the ability to enjoy it, the ability to appreciate and be satisfied is not inherent in that. That is not part of that place on the evolutionary scale. If you want to be happy, if you want to be satisfied, it's not available there. Greed does not lead to satisfaction. So, humans, we are still talking about what is humans and how do we tie it into motivation. There's another step. And the first question that you have to ask yourself in order to get out of the trap is to find out if you know who you are. Like, it's such a simple question. Who am I? Which is essential in order to answer what are my goals really? Because if I don't know who I am, the goals that I have really come from the old brain. And the old brain only has to do with survival. Well, you're already surviving. So the issue that you are dealing with, if you don't know who you are, has nothing to do with your potential. So you and I have to get out of the old brain. The old brain cannot answer who am I. It's sort of like expecting Fido. You ask Fido, who are you? It says, bop, bop, and wags its tail. And you say,
must be a Danish dog.
Bop, bop. Bow, wow. However they say it. Yeah, well, why not? You try and say it in dog language, and Fido looks at you and says, bop, bop. And wags his tail. And you can pursue that for a few hours, and not very much is going to be accomplished. You and I have the, because somehow or another, we had this other wraparound new brain that gives us the opportunity to ask, to even become aware of the possibility that we could ask ourselves, who are we? So people will variously answer, well, I'm a human being, I'm Peter, Joan, Cindy, Maria, Paul, whatever. They'll say I'm a male or a female. They'll say I'm a housewife or a carpenter or an executive or whatever. But that doesn't, of course, say anything. That would be like a Fido saying, I'm Fido. Oh, I'm a dog. You know, that wouldn't say anything. But who are you? Wow, wow. You know. You know, saying bow wow, is like a human being saying, I'm a human, I'm a female, I'm a doctor, I'm a man, I'm a whatever. That's like that. Now, we have to become aware that we don't know. The moment that we become aware that we don't know, we have an opportunity to begin to look at motivation differently. See, most people, they want motivation, not even knowing who they are. So motivation to do what? Get more of what they don't want? See, people have a problem that they're not asking yet the right question. The first question is, who am I? What is it that I really want? Well, I can't say what it is that I want till I know who I am. So maybe the first thing is to find out who I am. Now, if you are sitting in your living room right now and you ask yourself the question, who am I? And you don't know the answer. If you're not interested, you're not going to get anywhere. Because evolution doesn't care. You are one of the misfits. You're just not going to do it. You're just going to be a dog. So you'll end up by just wanting more pork chops. Our problem is that we're unaware that we're unaware. We're animals, like. That, like, we can assume that dogs don't know that they're dogs. Okay. Of course, we don't know what that means because we don't have dog consciousness. But we can speculate and say that dogs are not concerned with the problem of being trapped in dogness. They don't even know that they're dogs.
All right.
You know, translated into woof, woof, whatever, you know.
It sounds smooth.
Pow wow, as they say in English.
All right.
Then there are humans. Now there are humans who are not aware that they're humans. They're just functioning organisms, unaware that they're unaware.
Of what? That they're not doing it.
Not doing
now,
what?
They are not aware that they are humans. Now, humans is a potential for evolution. It's a threshold. Mm-hmm. Some humans are going to transcend that threshold, and some are not. All of them have been given the equipment to transcend that threshold. Now, what do we mean by human? A human who is not aware that he or she is a human is like a dog not being aware that they are a dog. Right. Now, if I'm not aware that I'm a dog, there's no way of transcending dogness because the question doesn't even exist. So a human that is not aware that it is a human is stuck in the potential. What is so exciting for the potential is when you begin to be aware that you are not aware. So in the experience, for instance, I ask you, who are you? That is getting you out of not being aware that you're not aware. It is getting to being aware that you don't know. That is what that first question in the experience addresses, to get you to look at, you don't know what the heck you are. You go around operating as if you know. Now, that's a very comfortable feeling. That looks very much like wagging your tail and saying bow wow or bow wow or whatever they say. That's a very comfortable feeling. I mean, it's not that comfortable, but it's a comfortable feeling. So I bring in the experience people to become aware that they're not aware. And then we load the stack. We get them to see insights, becoming aware, having, aha, I'm not doing it. Aha, I haven't communicated it. Aha, I'm not telling the truth. Aha, telling the truth really works. Aha, lies really entrap me. Aha, you know, so they get all these aha, and they love it. Then we come to the next threshold. Now it's getting more difficult. Because now I have to transport myself. I have to say, and we get people to do that. I have to say, now this must lead to some conclusion, another possibility. There must be another possibility. If all these pieces of information give me those insights, those sense, aha, which is like a release of energy. It feels good. I then have to come up against action. I have to do something now. Like I have to go and say to my dad, Dad, I love you. Now, the people who have never done that or haven't done that for 15 or 17 years experience a lot of tension. It's like they come up against it and then they break through. And, oh, and it feels so good. What it was that felt so good was the action. Now, what is the tendency when we have these great feelings? It is to go back and enjoy it. But now we are back and not doing it. And then we enjoy it and enjoy it and enjoy it and enjoy it and stop. And yeah, of course it stops because the energy, there is a lot of energy in it. And we are not smart enough to know that when the energy is there, that gives the energy to catapult it even further.
In my sort of admittedly misty sense of what motivation's about, I can look at examples. I was talking to Luis before the session started. There are people in our business, for example, in the recording business, who are very successful. And Tom Kramer, a friend of mine, and I were talking about that, and we were looking at some of the qualities that these people have that are so successful. And we noticed that all of them are very highly motivated, whether it's by greed, ambition, fear of failure, recognition, fame, fortune. Few, I have to say, I think come from a love of the art, you know, which is a sort of a kind of a nice sounding thing, you know. But so that to me, motivation, there's some connection between motivation and power, some kind of power. Here, when you talk about in the humanness of us, in our humanness, there's a certain quality, not of power in a negative sense, to overwhelm, an empowering thing if you keep doing it. When you don't, you lose the power. So there's some connection between power and motivation for whatever reasons, to gain power over something or whatever. And I think that's a fairly common. I remember when I started my company, I didn't realize until 10 years later I was doing it to keep my father happy. I mean, but that was a desperate thing on my part. I had no idea and didn't really get to it until I got the experience. I don't know if I've ever told it. But I had no idea why I was doing this studio. I knew it was an imperative, and I created the studio. Not because I loved it or whatever. I was scared to death I was going to fail, but I didn't know what failing was about. I thought, you know, I was going to show my father that, you know, I could do it. I didn't get that until later. But it's something to do with power in a way.
You wanted to impress your father. I mean, you wanted to make a point. Now, I don't know what your relationship was with your father, but it's very common that at some point or another, as a male, I have to establish that I succeeded. I have to establish that. And as a child, my father succeeded. It doesn't matter what he was doing. He succeeded. He was a success. So in my past, my father, for the most part, I mean, the overwhelming part, my father was a success when I formed my consciousness. Now, later on, I got into conflict because I realized my father was not a success. He was not God. He was not infallible. He was not this generous, benevolent God figure. He wasn't. He was just an ordinary human being, as I began to realize that I was an ordinary human being. What drove you, somehow or another, you never got into the conflict sufficiently where you negated your early conditioning. So now you had to live up to something in you. It wasn't your father. Your father didn't really matter, but it was your impression of your father.
Exactly.
So you had to live up to that. That's very understandable. So that you use that as an energy to catapult you forward.
Right.
That somehow you could not fail. Mm-hmm. It was not permissible because you never recognized, for some reason perhaps, that your father failed also. Well, I don't know. I'm speculating. I don't know.
Well, there, what that was for me was like a lack of communication. We didn't have any communication, mm-hmm. so I spent... God, I don't know, 20 years of my life wanting to communicate, getting if I could just get to him and show him how much I cared, how much I wanted him, how much I needed him, etc. But he just didn't have the capacity to communicate those things. He's a real stoic kind of guy and very, very black and white. And,
yeah,
you know, very methodical.
Neither of you did.
Yeah, obviously.
So your way of communicating perhaps was success.
Yes. Yeah, so they say, see, Dad, it worked. See, now we can talk. But, of course, then they couldn't relate to it. But that's neither here nor there. What do I want to make about that, Ali? The difference between the motivation you talk about in a human sense, there's something healthy, human, loving about the way you talk about motivation. And I think a lot of us get entrapped in motivation, and I hate to use labels, but like, say, in an unhealthy way. To me... what that did to me, what it took for me to do it, I mean, I'm real glad I did it, so now it looks nice, but then it wasn't till I could come in from a healthy, clean, human place. It was almost inhuman to me. Because I would work 3 days without stopping. I mean, then I'd ram myself in the ground. I mean, it's like something's out of whack there. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And this about achievement, see, it's motivation for achievement's sake, to achieve something, and when you get it, it's sort of empty. I think you're talking about...
Yeah.
Something that has a different quality,
see,
right?
It's interesting. I suppose it's like lions. Now, I don't know what motivates lions to have a big pride of lions. I don't know what it is that motivates a male lion to have a big pride. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But when I look at humans, I have some idea. A human who is not aware of him or herself being a human with energy... may move towards accomplishing something. Mm-hmm. But they never accomplish anything inside. So we experience, and we have experienced with lots of humans who have made lots of money, become very famous, have become whatever, that they get all those things, but they never get to develop the human way of experiencing having all those things. They don't, never do, because they come from being unaware that they're unaware. So their consciousness being unconscious of being unconscious. So that consciousness, now we make it personalized, because this is what we are as humans, we make it personal. We think that there is a person out there. But what it really is a form of energy that's human, which is a potential. But it's a potential in a vertical direction. Now, some humans will develop horizontally. So you will, in a horizontal way, develop a studio. But there's no, it doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you get more things, you can spend more, and you don't enjoy the lobster that you can now eat any more than you would enjoy a fried chicken sandwich.
So there's something missing.
There's something missing. You buy diamonds, but you have no appreciation of it. You buy very expensive wine, but there's no sense of gratification. You have lots of relationships, and sex has no meaning. Because you're developing on a horizontal plane, and on a horizontal plane, there's only that much emotional quality. So I don't expect a lion, a male lion, having a really meaningful sexual relationship with any one of the 10 lionesses that he has sex with.
Could you expand a little bit before we go further, what you mean by humanness a little bit more? You talked about, you used some examples of potential and so on. Could you define that a little bit more?
Humans are a statement on an evolutionary spectrum. It appears that it is the highest statement as a possibility.
In terms of consciousness.
In terms of consciousness. You see, consciousness is something that was not available as far as we can tell. We don't know yet. We are still exploring with dolphins. We are still exploring with whales. We are trying to communicate. We are trying to find a link to see whether or not we are, in fact, the epitome of the last rung on a continued ladder, the last place at which we have arrived. We, not we humans, but we consciousness manifesting. So humans are a potential. They're nothing else. They are not personalities. They're not individuals. They're not separate. But the experience is as if we are separate, as if we are our personalities, as if we are these items that we can list that appears as if we are each one of us in some way different. We are different, but the difference doesn't matter. It's sort of it's like you have a beard and I don't have a beard, and you have gray hair and you have more hair and I have less hair, and Louise has less hair, and Dominique has, and he's younger and I'm older and on a time scale, you know. But all of those things have no relevance to this impartial thing. I don't know what to call it. This impartial phenomenon that's called evolution. It's like evolution is attempting to unfold some possibility. And we appear as if we are a manifestation of another experiment, another this experiment that we now call humans. I mean, we take the liberty to call ourselves humans, to identify ourselves. And we happen, because we are identifying ourselves in that way, we identify dogs as dogs, and plants as plants, and trees as trees. That humanness is a possibility. But it's like talking about life. We talk about life from the single cell amoeba. It gets more and more complex. It gets more and more loosely hung together. And we seem to have broken through something between the animal kingdom and humans. Something happened, and a new possibility, very much like seals can swim in the water and they can be out of the water. Now, fish can only be in the water, so another complexity exists, very much the same with humans. Now, we have evolved. We made a transition that made us more flexible. One of the things that exists with humans that may not exist anywhere else is that our brain is split up. There is a survival mechanism, which seems to be where the dogs are. They're all in survival. And then there is, that's what we call the old brain, and then there's the new brain. Now, the new brain is the possibility. Now, people who operate in the old brain, who have power. So let's say that one person is a fish in the old brain, and he or she doesn't do anything. Then there's one person in the old brain who's a lion. Well, they conquer like territory. So they create recording studios, or they create corporations, or they create whatever. They go on a horizontal plane, and they make these things happen. Right? Nothing wrong with that. It doesn't lead anywhere. You get more of what you don't want in the first place, because the more I get sort of traps me. It sort of looks. I mean, it would be like a dog that had an infinite supply of bones. But I suspect that a dog that had an infinite supply of bones wouldn't look around very much. It would pretty much sort of hang around the bones. Yeah. You know?
Sure.
All right. Now, evolution is a possibility. And there is the possibility, most of the people who are making it in that way are uncomfortable. As you experienced yourself, you were being fairly successful. Well, were you happy? When I met you, I looked into your eyeballs and you were angry.
Very, yeah, sure, of course.
And...
because it didn't work.
No, it didn't work. The con is that if you go horizontally, you never get satisfied because you never get enough of what you don't want in the first place, because that's not what's going to do it. Let's look at what we are discussing, because what we are discussing is a possibility. We're not saying that there's anything wrong with what anybody is doing. It's like with evolution. When we talk about it, it's a possibility. There's nothing wrong with being a lion or a dog or a cat, frog, turtle. There's anything wrong with that. Now, it seems to me that human beings are a unique feature on the scene. Because it's like, no matter how much they get in terms of physical satisfaction, they are never satisfied, that there's always something else that they want to get. And most human beings never really get to a place where they're satisfied, where they're at peace, that they arrived and they live their lives out of that satisfaction. Now, most people think that if you got everything that you wanted and you were at peace, you wouldn't do anything. But that's not at all true. Let's look. If we look at it in terms of being in love, you go into work one day. You meet somebody in the lobby of the office building where you work. You travel up to the 30th floor. And you get into a conversation with this gorgeous other human being of the complementary sex. And suddenly, everything is different. You look around in the office, and the office workers are smiling. You are happy. You are excited. You can't wait to get and do your job. There isn't anything draggy about it. There isn't anything monotonous about it. The next phone call that you get, you answer the phone and say, "Hello, isn't it a wonderful day?" There isn't anything about it that's different, except there's something about you that's different. You are in love. Now, that is the possibility that you and I have as humans. We have the possibility of creating our lives in such a way that we have the experience similar to being in love. Being in love with our life the way we live it. We used to think that what we needed in order for that to happen was something that would motivate us to do it. Well, that's not the way that it is. When you and I are in love, we do it. And that gives us the motivation. It's like that feeds us doing it. But first, we do it. Like I'm in love, a gift. What do I do when I'm in love? I buy flowers. So I'm using that energy, being in love, to make me do something. Then when I do it, I feel great. I am the kind of person who does that thing. So that is a key to how to create, how do I create motivation? I do something. I act. It's not like I wait for motivation. That's backwards. I look at my life, and one way to look at my life is, if I were to die tomorrow, am I happy? Did I make it? Did I do all the things that I wanted to do? Did I be all the things that I wanted to be? Did I see all the things that I wanted to see? Most of you are listening out there, the answer would be a resounding no. I'm not ready. Go to the hospital and look at the people who are about to die and see whether they are ready. They're not. They are angry. They are frustrated. They feel cheated. Why me? Why now? Why I'm not ready? I didn't do it. But you have the opportunity to do it. Well, I don't have the motivation. Well, you want the motivation? It is as simple as action. See, I think that we have a problem. We have a problem that we can see what we need to do. Now, we know that something will happen, the kind of thing that we really want to have happen, if we did do it. But we have the ability to say to ourselves, well, the reason I'm not doing it is because I am not motivated. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to say that to ourselves. Well, that gives us a good excuse for not having to do it.
Mina, I can't believe what you said earlier. I mean, let me play the devil's advocate. All the things you talked about earlier, about evolution, the possibility, the potential that we have, it comes down to a simple action. It's that available? The things you're talking about to experience more of this potential, this possibility, is it begins with action, as simple as action, as simple as?
Yeah, it is not only... I mean, it's not only that it begins with action. It does not occur at all unless we act. Except in this whole process of evolution, there are little tidbits, sort of little giveaways to get us cooking. Little signposts. One of the things that we are given, and I usually call it, it's grace. We have the opportunity to be in love. And it's like that energy, that electricity is given to us. So now you're in love.
I mean, it's part of our nature? Like, is that what you mean in a way?
It's like it is one of God's chuckles. That somehow or another, we get a little gift, a little bit of something to give us an idea of what's possible.
Oh, I see what you mean.
But it was like in an experience one time, Oli was talking about being in love. And he said, well, it's being in love that I love somebody, and then out of me loving somebody, then I want to buy them flowers, write them love notes, say that they're wonderful, cook dinner for them. Or is it that out of my willingness to cook dinner, say that they're wonderful, write them love notes, that then I get to experience being in love? And I remember when he said that, I thought, my God, that's right. It's like, which one is it? And he said, that is one of the things that I've used in my life now. That I, since I don't know which one comes first, now what I've noticed is that when I am willing to write the love notes, be wonderful, tell the other person that they're great, scratch their back, I feel good. And I feel in love. And it's like that shifted my
approach
to like being in love. Instead of being a victim, now it's like I am the creator of being in love.
Exactly. It's like we used to think that we had to wait for it to happen. We used to think.
Looking for love.
That's right.
We fell in it.
Yeah. We used to think that we had to sit around and wait for it to happen. Like we used to think that we had to sit around and wait for us to be motivated.
Who's we, Oli? Who do you mean?
We, human beings. And it so happens that this also applied to the Russians. Now, I know that in this country we think that anything that we say here doesn't apply anywhere else. It's not true. It applies to all human beings. Because human beings are not Russians and Americans. They're human beings. Males and the complementary females. Or females and the complementary males.
I'm glad you said that.
You know. It was the males who wrote the Bible. That's why they said that Eve came afterwards. But I have a suspicion that Eve came first, and then at least it has. Ever since then, it was always Eve, and then something else happened.
Very slick.
Yeah. So anyhow, from a male point of view, you know, they thought Adam was first.
Now back to our story.
Yeah.
Could you call it, you know, somewhere that's this sort of everyday orientation about payoffs? We want to see the payoff, then we do something. Somebody give me $1 million running around the block 16 times backwards, you got it. That's a big motivation because I see the payoff. I don't know, maybe this conditioning to a payoff. It's like we want to see it before we do it. Like you don't see it before you do it and then you see it. See, that's kind of part of that. See, this orientation today. Well, why should I work overtime? Well, because you're going to get time and a half and you get $18 an hour. Okay. Oh, I forgot. You know, it's like, this payoff orientation is like kind of what you were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You know, we see, you know, we collect all these pork chops, you know, then somehow we've arrived, you know. So
yeah.
If you could, I feel like that, to me, feels like a real useful piece of business, you know, because you're doing it without seeing it. You've seen it before in a way, but I mean, you just go out and create it and then you get to experience it. We want to experience it, the payoff, to see it. Okay, I got it.
All right, let's go back for a moment. We're talking about
action, you mean?
A payoff. What we really want is a payoff.
Uh-huh.
What motivates you and I is that there's something out there that we want, but somehow we don't know how to get it. And we think we have to wait until we are motivated. Somehow or another, somebody is going to come and make us do it. Now, falling in love, for instance, falling in love is a very good example of how in evolution there are little tidbits of information. And what I mean by information is experience. There are little tidbits that are given. I don't know how. I say that God gives us a little bit of a push and says, listen, this is what you can have by falling in love. Now, what is it that we do when we fall in love? Well, what we do is that we do write little cards, serve dinner with roses, candlelight, soft music, walk along the everyday avenue that we walk all the time, feeling bored, static, nothing is happening, depressed. We suddenly experience it as being alive, and birds are singing, and trees are shooting leaves everywhere, and everything looks wonderful and exciting and new and so on. That's the gift. Why? I don't know. Who cares? It's a message of a possibility. We then begin to do the things that creates that experience.
That payoff.
That payoff. Which is the payoff that we want. We want to experience the trees with the leaves and the birds singing, and we want to experience other people being sort of exciting to look at. And it's sort of, have you ever been in love and walked down the street and wondered, I wonder what kind of a life that person has? Have you noticed when you're depressed and you don't care? Yeah. You don't even look at the person. But when you're in love.
Which I have to interject, really, is okay. What you're saying, it's okay.
Oh, it's okay. No, it's just that the quality of life is less.
If we could have it any way that we want, what we would want to be is in love. Anybody. In love.
Right, okay, good.
That so it's a possibility, you know, it's a potential. We're talking about the human potential as humans. If we could have it any way that we want to be in love.
Uh-huh. Okay, that makes sense.
Yes, we want to be in love. So, we are talking about motivation, and we are talking about what is it that we want. Well, we want to be in love, and we don't know how the two things, how do we get the motivation to be in love? Well, I say we are going backwards. We are sitting around waiting for motivation, and some of you who are listening there have been sitting around waiting to be motivated for 20 years. You see, there are certain steps in evolution. There are steps from an amoebae, a singular cell, all the way up to humans. And we now have the possibility to become the new humans. A realization of the possibility of living on the planet harmoniously with ourselves and others. With ourselves, let's talk about ourselves because that's the focal point. Living a life where we feel stimulated, excited, motivated, ready to do it, and so on. Now, being in love is a good, it's a gift. It's like in evolution, it gets thrown out there every now and then. That we get an opportunity to see what it could be like. What we have to do is to look at what is it that we do when we are in that state. I have noticed when I'm around people who are in love, if I go to dinner in their houses look beautiful. Their flowers, tablecloths. No effort is spared to make it wonderful. They even clean behind the toilet. I've seen people who are not in love. They don't do anything. They're waiting. They're waiting for the motivation to come around and strike them so that they can get off their duff and do something. Now, I'm saying motivation is created. It doesn't come by itself.
By action.
It's created through action. Mm-hmm. It's like as I act, I am building motivation. I don't get motivation from behind. I create it in front of me through action. So motivation is a quality that's created. We usually think that, well, you have to buy a tape, and the tape is going to make you motivated, and then you will act. Well, this tape is different. We say, you act, then you get motivation, and then all the things that you have always wanted begin to manifest in your wake. It's like closing the door, knowing that I left behind me. Mm-hmm. That which I want to be. So I didn't leave behind me something that I don't like, and then like look around for becoming something that I want to be. No, it's like we leave all the time that which we want to be. We leave that continuously behind us through action. Because I cannot leave something that I want to be behind me unless I created it through action. And in shifting from waiting for motivation to come to me, which will make me act, to acting, and which will generate the motivation to leave behind me that which I want to be. Because if I can leave behind me what I want to be, at any moment in time, I can die.
And experiment, you know, after you listen to the tape when you're through, for 24 hours, experiment, see what happens. For 24 hours, do it. Just be willing to do it in your life.
Yeah, and let me tell you what doing it is. It begins by waking up in the morning and please make your bed the way that you, when you were sitting looking in a magazine, Better Homes and Gardens, and you saw a bed, and you thought, now wouldn't it be wonderful to have a bed that looked like that? Make it that way. Hang the towels up. Just so. Can you remember the way that you saw it in Better Homes and Gardens? You saw this wonderful picture of the bathroom and the towels were just right. Can you remember once that you went and bought some towels and they were so fabulous, decorated towels? You know where they are now? Collecting dust. No, put them up. You put those towels up. And you hang them just so. The way that you've always wanted it. Then serve the breakfast. Can you remember that you saw in a magazine when you were traveling or in a dentist office? you looked up one of these food and wine magazines, and there was a picture of the way a breakfast table ought to look. Make it that way. Don't, I mean, you have had that coffee pot that you got at your wedding 23 years ago and 17 days. You have had it sitting in the cabinet, and nobody ever uses it. And every now and then, you know, every 3 years, you get it out because you have a special occasion. You don't realize that the special occasion is today. Put it on the table with fresh coffee.
And drink it with your nice china.
Oh, yeah. You know the china that you got? You went with the one that you were in love with, and you were going to get this wonderful china, and you got it? And is sitting somewhere, collecting dust, while you're drinking coffee out of this old mug that you've always been drinking coffee out of that you don't even notice anymore. Put your china on the table. Go to the office. You remember the first day that you got the job? You really wanted it, and you wanted it, and you wanted it badly, and you thought that you weren't going to get it, and then you got it. Go to the office in that way. Remember, you can create it that way. Now, it will take some work. Now, there isn't any free lunch, I'm sorry. It takes work. You have had all the experiences in your life that is necessary to tell you how to do it, because back then you got the motivation, like, for free. Now you have to make it up. And one way of making it up is to do what you used to do, and that will generate the motivation. Can you remember that you didn't care whether or not you went to lunch the first day? You didn't care whether or not you went to lunch at 11:30. You were willing to do it because you got the job and you were making money, and it was wonderful. You do it that way. Just once. That's how you generate motivation. You and I have to make it up every day. That is the opportunity that we have. If you don't make it up every day, if I don't make it up every day, have you noticed how it slides? It gets less and then less. Before you know it, you're back to the old mug. Leaving the bed the way that it, you know, and the sheets, you know, who cares? No, you and I need to work to generate that quality which we describe as motivation. We generate it. It doesn't come to us. And then we do it. No, we do it, we act, and then we suddenly feel motivated. And I'm sorry. Truly, I'm sorry that you thought that it was supposed to come to you. No. That is backwards. We create it. And I guarantee you, if you're willing today to make it up that way, that you will know how motivation is created. You will know how to do it tomorrow as well. It would be good for you to ask yourself, who are you doing it for? So often in life, we do it for somebody, an audience. This time, do it for you. Do it because you are the person that matters. You were the one who was in love. And when you wrote the card or you bought the flowers, you bought the flowers to celebrate the love that you had in you for somebody else. It really was you doing it for you. Now, you doing it for you include somebody else. But remember, the most important person is you. So do it for you. Do it because you want to be that kind of a person who celebrates his or her life. It is you that is celebrating it. Not at the expense of, not at the exclusion of, but on the contrary, with the inclusion of everybody around you. You need to do it for you. You are the one that matters. You're the one that counts. You are really the only one that can do it for you. I know that some of you think that you're not worth it. I know that some of you think that, well, I'm not supposed to do it for me. Don't shift the burden over on somebody else. You deserve it. It is perfectly all right that you do it for you. Today, do it for you. Just do it for you. You are doing it because you want to be that kind of a person, and then look at whether or not that creates exactly what it was that you wanted, which is that everybody else appreciated who you are. So do it for you. I've noticed about my life. My life is mine. My life is mine to give of. So when I say do it for you, I'm offering you the opportunity to do the very best that you can do with your life so that who you are becomes the kind of contribution that you've always wanted to make. That the best and only way that you and I can matter on this planet is that we do the very best so that who we become is the greatest contribution that we can make. So it is okay that you do it for you. Through that, you become the brilliant flower that inspires beauty, love, satisfaction for the viewer. So do it for you.
ISA would like to thank Oli and the ISA graduates who made this series possible. Please be reminded that reproduction of these programs in any manner without authorization is unlawful. Thank you for listening.